Welcome to the Latter-day Saint Home Educators Podcast, a source of inspiration, strength, and support on your homeschooling journey. We are so glad you've joined us.
So welcome to another episode of our Homeschool Conversations podcast. I'm your host, Tiffany Salter, Director of Marketing for LDSHE. Today with me, I am so excited. I can't even tell you how excited I am to have Christina Herrera with us. Christina, I've known her for 9 or 10 years. I'm not old enough for it to have been that long. But her mission is to connect, engage, amplify human potential in individuals, families, and organizations. She has spent 30 years in education with a specialization in early childhood and leadership and organizational health. She's been a teacher, a parent advisory member, a school administrator, a university faculty. She's done it all. She's seen it all. She's starting her own professional consulting business, and she's going to offer learning sessions, courses, event speaking, and coaching, and she'll have a website, we're getting fancy now, live in January of 2021. She has 4 children, 2 are in college now, 1 is a junior in high school, and 1 is a 6th grader. And I've met Miss H, she'll forever be Miss H to me because that's what the kids call her, when my daughter was a student in her kindergarten class. And there is nobody that I know of that is better versed on child development. And so I'm super excited to welcome her here to talk about kind of the way the brain develops and how kids learn. And the reason this came to mind was because I see so many Facebook posts about like, my 4-year-old won't sit still long enough to, you know, go through this curriculum. How do I get him to sit still? Or my 5-year-old, you know, doesn't want to read and cries when we try, and I just, my heart hurts, and I know people are coming to this from a sense of really wanting to help their kids and to be there and to really do right by them, but we're getting it all wrong in so many ways. So I wanted to talk with somebody who's really been there, done that, knows the research, has applied the research, has taught the research. She's really looked at this from all angles. So why does it even matter to have a basic understanding of child development?
Tiffany, I'm so happy to be here. It matters because what we do in the first 5 years of that child's life is going to affect the next 75 to 100 that come after it. All the rest is impacted by what we're doing with those children in those first 5 years. Cognitively, like how they learn, how they think, how they apply their knowledge, emotionally, how they react, how they get along, how they problem solve, physically, their bodies, what they're able to do, from the smallest thing to fine motor to gross motor, and socially, everything is impacted, and that foundation is laid in those first 5 years. And the experiences that the children have in those first 5 years are going to determine how all the rest goes. And things that become strengths will always be strengths. And things that were not developed or are weaker will always be a weakness. That's not to say that we do not learn from birth to death. We do. But the first 5 years lays those neural foundational pathways that everything else is built upon.
So no pressure, right?
No pressure. I will say sometimes when I have this conversation with people on their evaluations, they say they leave to go have more children so that they can do it differently. So pre-apologies if I if I cause any pregnancies today.
So what is the harm or what can be the problem with pushing a child to do a task they're not ready yet for?
Well, one of the things I think so many of us know and respect Stephen Covey and his 7 habits of highly effective people. And one of the ones that his habits was begin with the end in mind, but he doesn't say begin with the end. So each stage that child moves through from birth through those first 5 years is building upon the stage before it. And every minute that a child spends working on a skill that they're not ready for is a minute that they are not solidifying and strengthening the stage that they are in at this time. And it does catch up to them in later elementary school every time. When the foundation is weak, the house will fall. And we just, you don't want to skimp on these early stages and what they're doing. It seems like if they're reading early, that that's going to put them ahead, but the test scores and the research does not bear that out. They really need to build on this foundational skill. So if we think about what do we want, what is our end in mind? We do want readers, we want writers, we want problem solvers, we want thinkers. So what do we give in those early years that will create that? A reader is someone who loves to read and has lots of vocabulary and knowledge about that. So we can infuse that love of reading for children in those early years without making them sit down and try to decode words. That will come, but let's start with what's the end in mind.
Right, and I love that. And one of the reasons that we put my daughter in the school where you taught her fun kindergarten was the emphasis on play and really letting a kid be a kid. And, you know, that play is really instrumental to a lot of what is going on. So talk with us just a little bit about, you know, how does the development process work and some of the ages and stages kind of briefly.
Sure. The brain starts building before birth, and it continues until the end of life. It develops from the bottom to the top and from the simple to the complex. And all of that growth is dependent upon children receiving the correct sensory inputs. Receiving the appropriate sensory inputs, having predictable caring relationships, and minimalizing any kind of environmental threat. And by environmental threat, I don't mean, you know, the great outdoors necessarily. I just mean like they need to feel safe in their space, wherever that may be. Right. The newborn brain is a fourth of the size of an adult. So when you hold that newborn baby and their little head is the biggest part of their body, it's one fourth the size of an adult. But by the age of three, believe it or not, by the age of three, it's already 80% of its adult size. And it is developing, it is making connections at a rate way faster than we as adults do. Everything is going in and making connections and not being filtered out the way we filter out so much information as time goes on. By the age of five, it's 90% developed of its adult size. And this is, you know, thinking as we move forward from the age of five on, it's only gonna grow 10% more to adult. And going back to, and all those foundational pathways will have been laid in those years, in that time, that 90% of brain growth is happening. Just like any kind of other exercise or anything, that growing period, we've got to take advantage of that opportunity. The windows of opportunity, there are several windows of opportunities that progress throughout all of childhood, from birth, infancy, toddlerhood, early childhood, elementary, preteen, teen. And we are able to identify to some degree, science is able to identify when those windows of opportunity are. And it's important to be aware of that because they open, and that's when that part of the brain or that part of the development is more primed for those experiences. And it's not to say that it ever completely closes off, but going back to what I said, what isn't completely strengthened in those early years will never end up being a strength. So, for example, some of those things are our prefrontal cortex, which is the front of our brain. This is where our thinking, our decision-making, our impulse control, all the things that make us human and make us different than any other species throughout the world is that prefrontal cortex. That's what makes us different. It's more developed. Dolphins and elephants and whales also have a large prefrontal cortex, but it's not as developed as ours is. Some of the things that we know about the prefrontal cortex is that to develop it, those things have to be experienced and learned. They don't just develop naturally the way walking and talking does. a child will learn to walk with whether you teach them or provide them those opportunities to do, their bodies just naturally move into those different stages. They learn to talk by absorbing that language, but the prefrontal cortex things, the problem solving, critical thinking has to be experienced. Some of, I think these are key pieces that I think I like to share that are so important. That window of opportunity for social development, they say, is about from 0 to 48 months. And one of the most important things you can do for social development are those serve and return interactions with your children. Serve and return coming from tennis language, but if the child, you know, makes a face to you, makes a noise to you, does anything, that you return that interaction. And same with, if you interact with a child, that you wait for them to respond back. But those back and forth interactions, hopefully getting to 3 or 4 consecutive interactions in a row, are so critical to language, social development, all of these things that we're talking about. The independence window of opportunity, believe it or not, is 18 to 36 months old. We don't have independent 18 to 36 right. month year old children. That's not what we're saying. But their prefrontal cortex is open and learning, and those kinds of experience where you allow them to take their cup over to the table or right. pick out these clothes are so important in that small window. Cooperation, 24 to 48 months. Impulse control, 16 to 48 months. Impulse control, so important, especially when we think about, sadly, prison populations and things like that. Like, a lot of issues revolve around having poor impulse control. Mm-hmm. And what can we do with a small child just to help them wait just a second? And it's not that any of these things are like, it's not that these don't develop out your whole entire life, right? We are all still learning how to cooperate right. better.
I was going to say, I know a couple of adults, like maybe me sometimes, that struggles with impulse control.
Right? You know, we're constantly learning, but these are just special times that just right. spending time on these interactions can make such a difference later. And right. If we think about these things, impulse control, cooperation, independence, social development, in that age range up to 4 years, this is where we want to spend our time in that developmental stage, and not right. decoding words and
right,
those
right.
kinds of things that are going to come when they're ready.
Right. Yeah. Well, and you know, I've found with my own daughter that when I tried to push a math concept too early, you know, she would lose it, I would lose it, it was a nightmare. But if I could back off and, you know, trust in God's timing and come back at it later, like maybe even a year later, maybe, you know, 3 months, whatever, all of a sudden it would click, and she'd say, well, Mom, why didn't you tell me? Why did you make it seem so complicated? This is really easy. So I learned to back off. If it wasn't clicking, if it just, now that's different from a learning disability, but if it just wasn't, I could see she was having to work too hard to process it. And mm-hmm. I backed off, then, man, it was a whole different experience when we came back to it later.
For sure.
Yeah, but I love the, Mom, why did you make it so complicated? I don't know. Why do I do a lot of things I do? I don't know.
You're trying. We're just doing the best we can.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's a good, a really excellent structure to kind of think about some of these things is looking for those opening windows. And of course, not every child will develop on the same scale. You'll have some that will develop earlier and some that will develop later, but that gives us a good framework, I think, to start with.
Right. And the only caution I would have, once again, just to make sure that it's totally clear, is that you don't expect perfect cooperation at this young age. It's just giving opportunities to be like, can you help Mom? Can you help sister? Can you help Dad? Like, just planting right. seeds at that time. A good example that I see at the grocery store often is when you see the older child and a younger child fighting over a toy or any item, and the adult will say, just give it to him, he's the baby, to the older child.
Right.
Because for us as the parents, it's like, I just need to get to the grocery store. Can we just make this go faster? But the kind of just the thing to be aware of is that older child has already developed some of these sharing, cooperation skills, social skills, and the baby or the younger child is still learning them. So it's actually a great learning opportunity that even though it would be faster,
right,
that we at least talk to the child, even if they still end up with the whatever it is, right, that instead of telling the older child, just give it to him, he's the baby, that we actually right. talk to the little one and say, okay, you can hold it, but you're going to need to give it to your brother too, because we share, we cooperate.
Right, right.
That's where the rubber meets the road there, just that little subtle difference.
Right, right. And a good friend reminded me that we're not striving for perfection, but we're working, we're introducing, we're continually working towards this.
Yes.
So I like that idea, because I know a lot of homeschool moms feel a lot of pressure to do it right, or they've got family that don't approve, or they feel like they need to prove something. And so they're so nervous about getting it wrong. So, you know, and the child has some personality too. We can't take that away from them.
Nope, that's for sure.
So we got to keep introducing, and we'll have good days and we'll have bad days. And, you know, take the good and run with it.
Exactly.
Yeah. What kind of things need to happen in the brain and the body to before a child is really ready to read?
So a lot. A lot. And this conversation right? could get super scientific really quickly. But on just a general level, I wrote some thoughts down. And there's a lot of just fundamental processes that build, that develop over time. So just from those earliest ones, some early fundamental processes are just memory, sensory motor, attention, and processing speed. Those are almost like the bottom. If we're looking at it as a pyramid, this would be the bottom of my pyramid triangle of those pieces. And then right after those are language and learning and visual spatial processes that are happening, and they build upon the fundamental ones. So those are fundamental, then we have these intermediate pieces. I can't emphasize the language piece enough. If I could do anything in the world, it would be just talk and talk and talk to your children and narrate everything you do all the time, as if you are documenting your life story. I'm going to the bathroom now. I'm going to take a shower, then I'm going to come out, and we're going to take the vacuum cleaner out of the the closet. Just narrate everything. The language really, I believe personally, is the key factor in the achievement gap that we see throughout the rest of schooling, and which is such an issue with literacy rates and things like that. If they have the language, all what you're saying, that learning to read will come, and we want this language in these early years. So I talked about the fundamental processes, the intermediate, which is language and learning. And then we get to higher order processes, which is that social emotional competency and those executive functioning skills that we talked about earlier, and how that starts applying all that information and taking information from books and things. And then lastly, that overall functioning, which is when there's the achievement and the cognitive ability. And the deal is that when any one of those processes is disrupted for whatever reason, it's not just that piece is disrupted, it's for everything around it. So if the language piece is disrupted, if the child is spending a lot of time in silence or unfortunately interacting with just a device, then that disruption in language development is affecting all of these other pieces too. And that's where we can circumvent also later special education referrals and things like that for learning disabilities. because we need to lay that foundation so strong there. I mentioned the devices. I'm not saying that they don't have a place, but what we do know, and the research is still being done, there is no finalized research on this, but right now it's trending in the direction of that children really don't learn very much language from a device. And some of the reasons for that is because they have to look at facial expressions and eyes and the way the mouth is moving and things like that. And so we just need to be cautious because there's lots of companies and places that are selling language programs and literacy programs and things like that that operate from a device, and the research that is still, because it takes years and years and years of that, is still out and it's not trending in the right direction for those to be as effective as we thought. The research that I'm referring to that I've learned a lot comes from Dr. John Medina. In case somebody wants to look up his resources, he's written a book, the 12 Brain Rules. He's written one for infants, and I really, I have a lot of respect for him.
Also, I should add those into the show notes, a couple of those titles, because I think that's really helpful. But I'm glad to hear you say that about language, because I used to talk to my daughter, I'd talk, just like you said, narrate through everything. And one day my husband looked at me and he said, "You know she doesn't understand you, right?" And I felt really foolish for doing it, but I did it anyway. But I'm glad to hear there was research behind it.
Yes. You were just ahead of your time, Tiffany. But and they understand more than we think they do. And truly, the thinking, learning how to think, comes from listening to how other people think. One of the things I really work with teachers on is just narrating their thinking. When it comes time to write a story, just think it through, like yourself, tell them how you're struggling with coming up with a topic, or, you know, just narrate your thinking, because it helps. It's the story of how we learn.
Yeah, I love that. Narrate your thinking. That's a great, great idea. Love it. Okay. Sorry, I got a little sidetracked because I was so excited about that. I don't get, you know, too many times when I actually get validation that, yes, I was right. I'll jump on them when they come.
You should.
Yeah. And are there signs or kind of, like, how do you know if your child has kind of built the foundations and is ready to start learning?
They're always learning and they're always ready to read. The earliest stage of showing where they're starting to show interest and wanting to do it themselves, and they'll start very young with this, is picking up a book and trying to read it themselves, either recalling the story from memory. That is a developmental stage, and it's one that we should encourage. We don't have to push them past that. They will start to ask, like, what's this word, or what happened here, or they might not. They might have their own story, and that is perfectly fine too. But that, you'll know that they're starting to get interested in reading themselves when you see them looking through books and holding that. It's when you expose them to, you know, as they start looking at the books, and you might expose them to words, small, short, easy words, and telling them what the word is. A great hook for all children is finding words that start with the letter of their first name. You know, and that's your letter. Oh, look, Tiffany, that word starts with a T. That's your letter. Your letter is T. Yeah. And it's having them start to search and find those. But I really, you can watch your child, and they will lead you that way. And going back to what you just said too about validation, our parental intuition is extremely spot on about so many things. And I think we get distracted by what our friends say, or something that we've read, or what it seems like other people are doing sometimes, and instead of really tuning in to our own child.
Right.
And I think you shared a story earlier about the math concept and her just like not being ready. Your intuition was able to read that instead of saying, but Christy's child is doing it, so I'm going to make Tiffany do it. I'm going to make Abigail do it. You stepped back and just let it fall. And I want all moms, narrate your thinking, trust your intuition, and don't rush the process. I just don't.
Yeah. There's lots of time to catch up if you need
to. It's not even catch up. It'll come so much faster. I've taught kinder first, second. I've taught lots of grades, but I've taught all of those grades where reading develops. And I have seen child after child after child after child that learned to read in a matter of weeks because they were ready.
Right, right.
And I've seen other children that were being pushed to read before they were ready, that it took years.
Right.
And in the meantime, created a dislike of reading, created a dislike of learning, created poor feelings about themselves in school, comparisons with their classmates. I've been in education 30 years. I know more children that have learned to read in a matter of weeks because they were ready.
Right. Right. That makes so much sense. Yeah. We are both super passionate about education. So I know we could talk for hours about this, and I know that people will not tune in for hours of this. So I want to wrap up with a final question about where should parents go to look to find resources to help them understand, you know, what their children are ready for and beyond intuition, because that is super helpful, but it's also sometimes to have some resources. You mentioned John Medina's book, The 12 Brain Rules. Mm-hmm. Are there a few others that you would recommend?
So on child development, a book that I use a lot is called Yardsticks. And I don't have that author's name written down and it's escaping me at the moment. It'll probably come in a moment, but it's called Yardsticks and it covers child development all the way through age 14. This book is invaluable to me. I use it so often. And the other site that I go to really look at brain development and what can I be doing and what is my child ready for is Harvard Project Zero, which is at Harvard. And there's so many videos and information there that you can look at that's written in very, or shared in very simple ways that are spot on for what we need to be doing for young children at this time.
Okay, awesome. And we will put those two in the show notes as well, so people can have those. I am so grateful to spend this time with you. I always feel so refreshed and just energized when I get to talk with you. So thank you so much for joining us.
No, you're very welcome. Thank you.
And your website will be up in January of 2021.
Yes. So I'll send that information to you when it's ready so that you could share it.
Okay.
But I'm available now if you want to share my email and notes or something if somebody has further questions.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you. Appreciate all that you do for our children. And just, you're such a delightful person.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Thanks. Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Looking for even more homeschooling support? Visit our website, ldshe.org, for information on our annual conferences for adults and youth. And while you're there, check out our resource library, which contains more than 1,000 audio recordings from our past conferences, book recommendations, articles, and more. Latter-day Saint Home Educators can support your gospel-centered homeschool from the earliest stages all the way through high school and everything in between.